Hello and welcome back to The Bitter Jurors. We are a queer survivor superfan podcast, and this is definitely not the second time I'm recording this intro. As always, we are back to talk about season 46 of Survivor, and we are recording this on Mother's Day. I just want to quip up top, happy Mother's Day to the newest confirmed mother in the Survivor my family, Kenzie, who just posted today. That was a very exciting development on Mother's Day. And I am mother, I think, to these two men, Sam Standish and Derek Reining.
Yeah.
Sam did wish me happy Mother's Day. That was the first thing you said to me this morning.
Oh my God.
Before you hopped on the pod, Sam said, happy Mother's Day.
As you should. I'm sorry.
I think of all women as mothers.
Exactly. Well, maybe most of them.
Yeah. they can have their mother status revoked. Well, we might as well introduce him because he's already weighing in with facial expressions. We're so happy to have back just an icon of the new era, and we had him on last season and had so much fun, and we were so excited to get him back again. It's Ty from season 42.
Hi guys, thank you for having me back.
Oh yeah! Thank you for joining us.
Yes. You guys are some of my favorite gay people in my phone.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
I have a lot for sure, especially on Twitter. It will never be called X. Just like I know if your tweet pops up on my timeline, I'm going to LOL. Like I'm going to have a giggle.
Good. That's the goal, as always. So, hi, as a member of season 42, can you speak to perhaps one Soda's ability to play as your season, as she predicted she would?
Oh, right.
I wish we could have seen more of Soda's game, because I really liked her as a personality. I have so many moments of her just being like, a character, but I can't recall her game besides playing in the middle with Tevin and Hunter, and then also entertaining Venus on the side, which is so interesting. Their dynamic on this season is really perplexing to me, because I feel like we're not getting enough information into why their relationship soured, because apparently it was very close at one point.
Yeah, I was gonna say that I feel like she played very similarly to season 42, since there's so much Ponderosa drama.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah.
So I feel like maybe that is why we're not getting the full story. Like everyone's being cagey. I don't know.
You think the edit is the result of kind of avoiding fleshing out that relationship or off season drama?
I'm wondering as to like what we're going to learn post season, because like it does feel like there's some like big gaps into like why certain players are having the reaction they did to Venus, and like why these relationships deteriorated. And it's interesting, we've gotten like a lot of commentary from players like in the game, I don't like her, blah, 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 but not really like why. And like we get other people were like Tevin and Soda talking about it, and it's like, okay, but what happened? Like what the story?
And you know what happened this season that I think did a general disservice to it? I think it's fabulous post-merge. I think pre-merge was a slog. Like
it was bad.
It was hard to get through, and I say this with love, because like I really like the season and I like the cast, but the editing was just so focused on like one player in specifically. And I was talking to my partner, who watches the show with our group of friends because it's fun, but he's not a fan, and his interpretation was it was boring. Like there was nowhere for this narrative or this character to go. Why are you giving him so much emphasis when they could have spent that time fleshing out Nami and Siga more? Because we don't know why those relationships fractured.
Yeah, it's like most of the jury is Nami, but I'm like, I have no idea how they feel about the people still in the game. Like it's kind of, other than Venus, who isn't in the game, but like, at this point, I was like, I really only know that they don't like Venus, and now that doesn't even matter because she's now on the jury with them. So it's like,
Yeah, but like we don't know why Liz hated Soda or why.
Yeah, that was one of the weirder narrative threads. It was like everyone knows I hate Soda.
Yeah. Also, I feel like we didn't really see a lot of Liz pre-merge, which is why like her emergence as a central focus on the show post-merge is really fun. But also like it's a disservice to her game because I think she's playing an interesting game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know if she's, it's very weird to see like Liz's blow up was, the reaction was not like, oh my god, Liz is like a cuckoo person, we hate Liz. It was like people felt bad, like genuinely felt bad for her, it seems. Mm-hmm. Like, or like the other players don't seem to like be holding that against her, at least from what the edit is showing us, which I'm like, so clearly yeah. she's doing something right where she's not inspiring right. like anger
yeah. in other yeah. people. That's something I didn't yeah. think about. You had like that everything with Liz hasn't been played, like it's been like humorous to the audience, but like to the players in the game, you know, it hasn't been like, oh, this crazy, crazy woman, which yeah. is an interesting part of the game because like on a cast that really likes to say how much they don't like each other, you would yeah. think that this blow up and like everything Liz says would get more airtime as being, you know, players talking about how ridiculous she is.
And it's making me wonder if she
eventually... if Liz is winning.
No, if well, I wonder if she's getting to the end as like a zero vote finalist goat, and they're just not explaining the other players' POV, but very much as the audience, where we perceive her to be a non-threat, right? Like she can say crazy things, she can outright like verbally call people out and not receive any repercussions from her tribe mates. Like no one's targeted her, she's never like a name that comes up. And the thing is like that would only happen if people aren't perceiving you to be a threat, like you just will keep skating by. So I wonder if she's getting set up for a losing vote finalist ending,
especially because even in this episode it was like after the reward happened and she was at camp and she was talking about like how she's like done not expressing herself because she's even like, I just hate Q, like I can't handle Q. And he's like walking up behind her and Maria's like, Liz, and she's like, I don't care. Like, I just want to say how much I don't like him.
Yeah, does it so feel funny. Like to you guys a lot of people this season are not playing to win?
I don't know what is happening.
I don't know what it's say this is a very strange season. Strategically, in that people with idols are going out with them. There's almost like more obsession with like credit for, there's certainly like more talk of credit for moves, whether or not the move is like optimal. I just feel like the fact that Q is like still around and like yeah. the discourse about if he's a threat or not, there's just like a lot of weird narratives going on the at the camp of who's a threat and who's not. And it's not that I don't think people aren't playing to win, I just think they're playing weird games.
They're yeah, yeah exactly. I feel like they're all definitely still trying to win. It's just they're making interesting decisions on the way to that goal.
And well, I'll get to this, that magic of like what this like means of what we can expect from a winner. But yeah, I think this is in a lot of ways a very unconventional end game we're seeing in terms of like the perceptions are just very skewed and what people want is very skewed and whether they should want it is very skewed,
which is perplexing because I think the edit has done a pretty decent job at fleshing out people's stories and mm-hmm. voice, but I still like am so lost at the final outcome sometimes. Like why did Q seemingly escape that one tribal where he asked to be voted off? Like how did people make that decision? Like we're just not getting a lot of that, so like it's hard for me to understand certain people's games or root for certain people because I don't understand your decision making, and that's not their fault, like that's mm-hmm. that's on the edit,
especially because even in the episode where it was like I think it was the final nine and like the votes were split between Hunter and Q, and then Q voted for Ben, but it's like I don't really feel like most of why people voted the ways they did, like, were explained leading up to it or afterward. Like, it just, they had a split, and then they all voted out Hunter except for Liz. And the main thing that I was focused on was that Liz still voted for Q, but I was like, well, why did everybody else vote for Q in the first place also?
you know what might be really hard to understand about this season for me is like the tribal lines are very blurry for me. Like I cannot recall who's working with who used to be on like the same tribe pre-merge. And I think that is part of the reason why like I'm not necessarily understanding strategy, but maybe the show is not giving me enough information besides like Charlie and Maria are working together. Like who else is working together and why is something that I'm not really getting.
Agreed. And like the Q's only like recently been roped in and it's like purely, mm-hmm. It's not like a decision Q made. It was like Maria like snatched up Q as a vote. And like, that's just like, now it's just like his only way of surviving in the game. I wonder if a lot of that has to do maybe with the cast. Like maybe no one like on their original tribes bonded that much. And now that they've like hit merge, they're a lot more interested in like seeking other ways to the end besides just like playing with their like the people they've been with the whole game. Like the Nami tribe, like none of them really wanted to work with each other except like Hunter and Tevin. And maybe part of that was that six person alliance that got made, which was like two from each tribe. That instantly is like so you're diffusing like the power of the game into each tribe individually, and it's like focused on smaller groups. So I wonder if like this group was just like never going to get along with their like original tribe members, and that's why it feels weird. It's like none of them ever really bonded like actually.
And do you think, and I have this theory that like every filming cycle those seasons play out sort of like the opposite of the cycle before, because it oscillates based on like what you were able to watch and retain mm-hmm. in terms of strategy before you played. So like 41 and 42 were very similar. Like we were like mirrors of each other. It was really spooky to have played my season and watch 41 unfold and see like essentially the same outcome with like you know, like a quieter Canadian woman when like, so many parallels, but because they were so similar, 43 and 44 were able to overcorrect for our gameplay. So you saw those seasons vote women out pre-merge consecutively, like mm-hmm. they paralleled each other. The winners were, you know, like both men. So it was that a subconscious bias for people going into their seasons. And then now 45, 46, wow, polar opposites were definitely influenced by the seasons that were just watched.
I think so. And I mm-hmm. keep thinking about 43 and like 44 in those terms. I feel like this season feels like 43 was similar in tone in terms of like people like being kind of scared to make moves or people like being playing very defensively. That's how I feel like Maria is kind of playing now, where she's like, I'm protecting Charlie and Q and then keeping Q as a number. And that's like Maria's goal. And like no one else really wants to like actually gun for Maria, like depower Maria by taking out either of those numbers. It's like those just aren't an option for anyone. But it also feels like a reaction to 44, where maybe people are scared of being perceived as like a Tika 3. Like,
yeah,
that's scary to people.
Mm-hmm. I think it's
also certainly coming across in this obsession with credit for moves and like how you appear at the end, because we saw 43, obviously the Cassidy of it all, and to a lesser extent Carolyn in 44, like she was someone who the viewers saw like a lot of her thought process, but the jury didn't take her seriously. She didn't have enough like concrete things to her name. And so I think we're seeing that. So this is gonna be really interesting. I mean, looking ahead to this next cycle, the next season, they're like leaving like this week or something. Like, are they, what are they going to take away from what they saw in 45 and 46? Like, are we going to see people burning idols now? Like, or not even wanting to find idols? Mm-hmm. I think it's certainly like, we can't underestimate these impacts, because I think you're totally right. We do see, even consciously or subconsciously, these reactions to the way the game is shifting in each season.
I hope that the takeaway at least is that, like, if you want someone gone pre-merge, like, just you throw the challenge. Like, you want it to set yourself better up in the merge. You want to go to tribal once. Like, you need to just like see what happens. And I know it's hard. And like, I don't think I actually would throw a challenge, but I just think you actually do want to go to tribal. You do.
It's really hard for your game to start at merge. Like, you have no bearing into how the people you've been playing with for like however many days pre-merge are thinking, because you haven't voted yet. You have no idea if you are in the majority number. You have no idea if the alliances you've made before merge like are true and genuine. So like there's so much benefit in being able to go to tribal as many times as you can before merge, which is why I think like Tika during 44 were able to navigate post-merge so well, because they did it so many times. And same with Yanu this season. Like, you know, Kenzie, Q, and Tiffany were able to navigate a lot of tribals together, which is why they entered a merge with the least amount of people and were able to survive for so long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, I think it's, obviously it's hard to not think about like Kenzie gunning for Tiff. Like it felt very quick, but it was like there were literally like two tribals there where like Yanu was like not like at the mergatory. Like Yanu was just not even, and obviously a big part of that was they were immune, but like it didn't seem like Yanu was even like on people's radars as like a potential threat. So I agree, there is something to that of just like you gotta put the work, you gotta put the hours in to really like reap the benefit at the merge. But I like that idea of like you want to go to tribals, but it's almost like what happened with the swap on 45, where it's like D, like, I don't know, like you do want to go to tribals, but you don't want to like lose numbers. Like that's like the tricky part of it, is like you want to go there, but you want to like sort of shore up instead of like getting like parts, like numbers taken away from you.
Yeah, so, but there's so much benefit behind being in the minority number sometimes, especially when you like when it's a like three tribe entering merge situation. If your tribe is essentially invisible, no one's really considering you as targets, because it feels almost like a wasted vote. Like obviously it's not, but that's just the perception when you're out on the island of like, oh, there's only two of them. Like, why would I target them when there are bigger fish to fry? And then those minority numbers will sneak through.
Mm-hmm. Yes. We spoke and like, but it's, but the people now, the people who are like in control seemingly are the people who have like the three Sigas pretty much who's like stuck together. Like Maria, Ben, and Charlie are like just sort of in power, and people are deciding not to stop them for whatever reason. And we talked about it a little bit before, but like everybody just getting on board to like vote out Venus rather than the like the potential four person group of Liz, Venus, Kenzie, and Charlie coming together to take out Q or Ben, I guess. But like, I think, I mean, at least the show, the story in the show is that that was going to happen until Venus like sketched out Charlie with the idol thing. Which is like, I'm kind of like, I don't know what the right move is. I'm sure that like Kenzie is going to be mad about like getting having the split vote on her, and like mad at Charlie for like not going with the like more ballsy or like better perhaps move. But it's like Kenzie might be mad at him, but like if he wants to use her for a vote in the coming round, what's she gonna say? No, like she still doesn't have allies. She will need him if she wants to flip things.
Who do you guys think is playing the best game right now of the remaining six?
I feel like it's like pretty easily Maria, honestly. I mean that's like maybe it's not a winning game, but I think she is like playing a very controlling game.
What are you saying?
What do you mean?
It's the best, but it's not winning. Like,
I don't know.
What to read? See, everybody in this episode is like Maria is a gigantic threat.
Yeah, right, Maria.
But it's like who's? If you're saying Charlie's playing a better, I think he's also playing a losing game in a lot of ways.
He's playing a good game on paper, but he needs to like have a good finish. I think Maria set herself up in a place where like she needs to have like a perfect finish, because like she's like,
sure,
that is like, what's the best? I mean, it's the question, what's the better game? The game that guarantees you the win if you make it there, or the game that gives you the best odds at making it to the end? I think Charlie has way better odds of making it to the end. Maria has better odds of sealing the deal. But he's like, you know, I think Maria is just putting herself in a position where everything needs to go right for her to even get there. And if she gets there, great. But like, we can talk about what she did with the rock paper scissors and socially, but I think she's playing a strong dominant game, but I don't think that's necessarily the best one, 'cause I don't know if that will get her there.
I think the opposite. I think even though she is playing a very strong game, she's already lost it. I think the one thing that people really forget to consider when they're out there is that people have to like you. Like, that is above their like strategic game or a social game. People have to like you. And we see players lose all the time. Cassidy, I would argue, on 43 lost because even though she played a better strategic game, the jury did not like her, right? So you see it this season now unfolding, like during Jeff's monologue, which I'm like wondering if they added in like post-production because it was like setting up the storyline a little too well, because a lot of these players are not likable. I mean, I like them, but like they're likable. Like Maria, that rock, paper, scissor decision was
insane. I couldn't believe what I was seeing.
Yeah, I've never seen someone blow up their game with such like a trivial decision. Not trivial, but you know, just like you could have just made a decision. It could have hurt someone's feelings and that would have been that. But you just dragged it out, mama. Like what is the thinking here?
Yeah, it's
confusing. No, and it's like in the new era, like players in general are a lot more like accepting, okay, if you blindside me, it's like not the same, you know, anger we used to see. But when it's something like so unnecessary, because you're like, okay, it's part of the game. This is not part of the game. This is like, this was like the part of the game is where you choose. And she like went out of her way to not choose and to like turn this into, as Venus said, a farce. And yeah, she didn't, it was an unforced error. If she had like just picked Liz, Q would have been like, whatever. I don't think Q maybe in his confessional would have been like, I wouldn't want a pizza. But like, this was such an obvious choice and no one would have complained.
She didn't choose, and she ended up choosing the people who were never going to flip on her. Like, she left the four people who may have like voted out one of her closest allies together. And I'm sure that she doesn't view Charlie that way because he's like playing well and whatever. But like, ultimately, the choices were bad because it, like, if Venus hadn't fumbled the like information with the idol, like Q would be gone. Like her like closest ally who's not working with anybody else, according to the show, would not be there anymore. Mm-hmm.
And if she had lost immunity, I think there's a really good chance that genuinely would have flipped on her. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think she would be mirroring Jesse's gameplay for me if she came off more likable to her tribe mates. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think she's playing a really spectacular game. I'm not going to lie. I think her and Charlie are both playing great games. I think the reason people are not receiving them well is that they have, you know, like they're not the underdogs. They're receiving really great strategic edits and people are naturally going to find faults with them because of that. But I think they're playing great games. Charlie specifically is really impressive to me. Mm-hmm. He is playing just like Omer. I think he's able to kind of make people believe that he's with them so that they can divulge information to him. And then he uses that to his advantage by deciding like which route he wants to take. But I think Charlie's playing a great winning game right now.
I agree. And even like getting, if this alliance of four, like the Seegas and Q were the final four, like he's in a good position. Like all supposedly what that would need to happen is taking out Maria. Although people in this episode were kind of like, if Q or Maria gets to the end, they win, where I'm kind of like, I'm sure that that's like threat building and like targeting each other. But like, it's like, is that true? Who knows? But like, I think that that's a good position to be in as you get down to the final four. Like, there's one big threat who you throw into the fire and like, and it's someone you all agree on like needs to go.
So you guys would say Charlie is playing the best game in your opinion?
I would say everyone is playing very flawed games. Charlie, Charlie's game has his flaws. Like, he really needs to, like, even if Maria doesn't have, like, he's in a position where even if Maria like can't win a jury vote ultimately because she's like have her likability issues and her the optics, even if she can't, like him like sitting next to her, it like it really hurts his game because she's still seen as the stronger player. And like, so he just really needs to get her out, even if sitting next to her isn't necessarily bad on paper, but it's like there's a third person there. If it was just the two of them, you know, he might be able to play that well, but like I think he really runs the risk of sitting next to Maria and someone else. And then the narrative becomes about how he didn't do anything because Maria was, or like he didn't have the guts to take out Maria. And mm-hmm. then the third person scoops up, you know, votes that didn't want to go to Maria. And so he just like, I think he's playing the closest to the winning game. But yeah. he needs to seal the deal. And like, there was some interesting, we were talking the editing segment. He's very aware of like, in this episode, in his own like confessionals, like, you know, what I do, like I could very easily lose this game by this vote. And I think also like, if the time comes for him to try to take Maria out, that will be a game losing or game winning decision for him.
Mm-hmm. Even if he doesn't take out Maria, like he needs to do something to differentiate himself from her, like direct comparison to Dee and Austin mm-hmm. last season. Like they played very similar games. Dee has the one thing where she's like, but this is like what I did specifically for myself. Like I kept this information from you. Like this was my move. And it's like, if Charlie just needs to do something of in that way. And like, I think mm-hmm. that Survivor juries, you know, whether they care about that kind of thing in like their subconscious or whatever, like that is what the discussion is going to be at final tribal. So it's like, you need to have something to say because that's what you're going to be asked. And like, even if juries usually vote for the person they like the most or whatever, like not being able to respond and not being able to differentiate your game will make the jurors less feel way less good about voting for you. And so like that could shift their opinion.
You know what I could see happen as well? I mean, I don't think it will, but I could see Maria, who is a little shown in the edit as being obsessed with receiving credit, perceiving her relationship with Charlie to be a hindrance to her at Final Tribal, because mm-hmm. It's cool to play with someone the entire game and to like make decisions together, but splitting credit at Final Tribal is never an easy thing to do. And if you were a good strategic player, you would cut your number one before, because then you get essentially all the credit. And I could see Maria trying to do that to Charlie. So I wonder if they're like one of them is going to cut the other before the final three.
Yeah, I think it needs to be Charlie if he is going to win, because I think it's like been expressed like to the players have said outright, like Charlie is her lapdog or her second, like whatever they said.
Her jester. Episode, like,
her jester.
Wait, who said that? Connor,
Kenzie did.
Kenzie.
Wow, she said.
And Venus, I think, said something similar. Like there's this perception of Charlie as like second to Maria. And so I think it's like Maria can sit with or without Charlie at the end. I don't think she's doing well no matter. And I think that's why I put her game above his, because I think if she makes it to the end, she's like winning, period. And I think regardless of her social faux pas, everyone else has had social faux pas.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And like, I just find it more impressive that she has these people like Charlie, who Charlie is like looking at Q, looking at how obsessively Maria wants Q in the game, and is saying, yeah, mm-hmm. she can still have that in the game. Like, that's bizarre to me.
But it's because, but he was looking for alternatives this episode, and the people on the bottom were not like
right. But then it's
to make
like
a move. They were like, he was like, I'm trying to lock down a final four alliance with Venus, and she's like leaving me out of information, like in conversation.
But I guess then that's like, okay, so they take out Q. Then what is the like? I understand his like trepidation with Venus, but it's like, at Final Four, there's no vote there. Like, why are you that scared? I don't know. I get that it was like scary in the moment and he didn't know she had an idol, but it's just like, to me, he still would like be fine. So it just seemed like mm-hmm. a weird faux pas to not like make an active move against Maria, that he can like outright state to the jury, this is a move I made against Maria and you have to give me credit for it. Especially when like that's something they were expressing in this episode. They're like, Charlie needs to like do something to differentiate his game from Maria, and he chose actively not to do that in this moment. He could still do that. I just don't know if it's like too little too late, especially with like how emotional this cast has been. It's like they might just like Jeff was saying, maybe they just don't like Charlie and they don't want to vote for him, or maybe they just don't like Q, or like whoever it is who's gonna like not get the votes, whoever that like line is supposed to be like prophesying, like that's just gonna apply to them. And I don't know if that's gonna be Charlie or not, but that's just like the vibe I got this episode when he said people are gonna look at me badly for working with Maria and Q. Like, okay, then I believe you.
But maybe he's more like, why would I show my cards to take out Q when like I think that he wants the big thing that he does is like take out Maria, I guess, rather than like, okay, he got out Q, who was like this like
targeted pariah. Every single week. Yeah.
I just think he's a risk averse player. Unfortunately, for entertainment purposes, I think there are two types of players, like risky players and risk averse players, and it just depends on like your play style. I think he's more about making the logical move of disarming his targets rather than disarming himself and picking out a strong ally. So, and I think that makes for like a good game, but maybe like boring television, which is okay. Like he's there to win $1 million, not a million.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we were the number one Reba 4 fans for all of 45. So like, I'm sorry, there's nothing boring about playing well to me.
Would you consider yourself a risky or risk averse player?
I was probably a more risk averse player than I would have liked, but I think I am naturally a risky person. But also I could say that I played a risky game too, just like changing my vote last second or really taking a bet and turning on my alliance like at merge unnecessarily in a lot of ways. So like I would say more risky than risk averse.
I think that's fair. And I mean, I feel like that, like whether that's successful or not is also dependent on the season. I think there are seasons where being risky is the better move. So there's seasons where being risk averse is the better move. And you genuinely don't really know what it's going to be until you just actively, like, until you make that decision.
Yeah.
And that's the fun of Survivor, baby. Yes.
You guys think it's going to be a bitter jury?
It better be. I mean, they hate the jury is bitter towards each other. So maybe they'll actually like whoever's left at the end, but it seems like they are not a happy group. And I'm just really curious, like I said before, like I don't really know what the Namis are gonna, because like they're a majority of the jury, or like they're four of the however many there's gonna be. That's a lot of people.
There will be seven
jurors? Or would it be
eight?
Mm-hmm.
There'll be eight.
Oh,
can't be nine.
Okay. Always eight in the new era. So
I think a lot of the people left in the game have at least one juror who does not like them at all. So,
yeah.
I think it'll be fun. I think Kenzie, Ben, and Charlie are probably the people who are least disliked among the jury so far. But like Venus might be mad at Charlie. Who knows?
Yeah, I have a feeling like really... Venus will probably leave the game not happy. I haven't. All I saw about her exit press was the Ponderosa drama. So I don't know how she feels about Charlie. I would imagine she's probably not pleased with Charlie, because even if we can see in the edit that okay, she didn't handle that conversation really well, like Charlie was right to be sketched out. From her perspective, she was offering Charlie an olive branch and a path forward, and that was like he took that and voted her out. And so, yeah, I think Charlie could potentially have a bitter juror in Venus for sure. She's not someone who's going to swing the jury against Charlie because the jury does not like Venus.
Right.
But if it's in a close vote, that could be dangerous for him to, you know, be perceived as, even if he was right, we can see that he was right to be spooked by that. You know, Venus's feelings are her feelings and her vote will go the way she wants.
And with his seeming goal to take out Maria, I would imagine that would leave her pretty steamed.
Yeah,
depending on how he does it. You know, like Maria is someone who could end up really respecting it, but like he's going to have to tread carefully because she, you know, that could be a lost vote if he handles it poorly. Things need to go right for Charlie in terms of, he needs to be able to like take credit for if Maria goes, he needs to be able to quote unquote take credit for it. But then by taking credit, if he takes too much credit for it, that could leave Maria burned. If he's seen as like the sole decision maker there, that could lose a really crucial ally on the jury to campaign for him. I mean, Kenzie and Ben on paper are in the best position to get a lot of jury votes based on like the personality hire, in terms of like they can both like get to the end without having to burn the remaining people, really. Like, because yeah. I mean, Kenzie especially, like, I think Kenzie's like has in the position to like, if we're looking at someone who could pull off like make it to the end and pull off a social win, it's Kenzie or Ben. And like Kenzie for sure would, like, Q, you know, God knows what's gonna happen with Q, but they're close friendship. They've always had a tumultuous friendship. Whereas Ben is with the Sega 3, you know, how, you know, who's he gonna sit next to? How is he gonna get them out? Yeah.
I feel like Ben is in a better position. While he's been in on the votes and like he has perhaps too many shields in front of him to get to the final.
That's the issue.
But I think he's more like, if he's maybe now that he's eaten pizza, he'll like come alive. like we saw a couple episodes ago where like Q got a reward and then like suddenly was doing the Q skirt, hide and seek, all that stuff happened like right after he ate. So maybe Ben will get 20 confessional sex episodes leading into the finale.
I mean, he really needs that at this point, because like it's we talk about like kind of like Liz being hidden in the beginning and then becoming this big character. Ben got this fantastic, really fun edit in the pre-merge, and then is just an increasingly hidden. Yeah. And it just seems like his story right now, I was looking at like some like people outside of our Twitter circles and also on Facebook. People are like, who is Ben? What is he doing? Like people, like a lot of people don't know like what he like the perception is that he's just like a vote for Charlie and Maria, and that is like, you know, you can tell he's positioned well socially and he's really likable, but clearly there's just not, he had a really strong narrative in the pre-merge and now it's kind of like he's sunk into the background, which he's playing an under the radar game and that could make it get him to the end and win socially, but he's lacking that like strong narrative right now. And I do think narrative matters a lot at final tribal council. Yeah. Like telling the story, Marianne pulling out the, you know, you need to gag the girls, you need to tell the story.
Sometimes not every season, like 41.
Yeah,
we didn't understand.
Yeah, it's
important for the audience.
She controlled the narrative, she was doing the PR thing, she was like, I have the exact right answer you need from me.
The spin.
That's what I mean. Like, you need to tell a story, even if there's no narrative.
Right. 43, we also had a hard time understanding the narrative until the very end.
Yeah. Well, and if you have jurors who are willing to tell your narrative for you, that's a pretty great.
Emily Flippin, financial analyst.
Yeah.
Let me push back on that.
This touches lightly on Edric, but I want to say I read, it's more like foreshadowing kind of thing, but I read someone projecting that all of the Ben like rocks does not rock thing is leading up to him getting rocked out of at like final six. And I was like, it'd be too much. Especially because they've like really pared down the like edit, and I feel like they really like to hide the people who go out in that kind of way. So I'm like, it could happen.
It'd have to be next vote, right?
Yeah.
Interesting. Rocked. That would be like a little too much.
Sega versus the other three.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
Liz, Team Kenzie, Liz, team
you are not going to vote together, so that's not.
They
gonna
have
happen.
The past
they,
few.
Yeah, reasons. They will.
Oh my god.
Okay. Wait. Also, at Tribal Council this episode, Venus and Q were going back and forth, and Q was like, well, you were left out of the vote last time. And Venus is like, well, I knew about the previous three votes, which you didn't, which is like not what happened. Like, it's like not according to the voting charts on Wikipedia, Q was in the votes, other than like the
you better let her Hunter.
Even with Hunter and Q and Ben thing, like, well, what was he gonna do? Vote for himself? No, he voted on Hunter, and like the previous two ones before, like he was voting correctly.
I'm gonna miss Venus. I feel like she's such a Twitter loves her, obviously. But it's just like, I just love the fact that they cast this like hot woman from Toronto who is just fiery and opinionated and kind of like chaotic and played this game with so much heart, and like even though like no one wanted to play with her, like poor baby, but like she still like tried at every opportunity to like play this game, and I think she did such a fun job and I'm really proud of her.
Agreed.
She I'm obsessed.
She made the final seven, which I think is way further than anyone expected her to. Go off, Diva. Love her. I feel like she would definitely be a lock in a returning season if that's in the cards.
I feel like season 46 is going to be a really good study in what producers care about for returnee people, because like I feel like Venus and Q are like the number one and two people who they would want back the most, but they're also the people who have been most like going against the social media rules. Like so it's sort of like how much weight does that carry when it comes to returning to the show.
I think producers need to see that you have to give contestants a little bit of like autonomy and grace to exist as themselves as the season is airing, and to allow them space to communicate and talk about how they feel, because it just makes for like a more authentic experience to like see them live out the show in real time without spoiling anything, obviously. Like I know there's been a lot of animosity between this cast solely from social media, and that's the thing, it's entertained us, it's kept us in suspense, and we still don't know the ending. So like this is a great case study to show producers, like, let your contestants breathe, let them live.
I agree, and it's I would really hate for sort of like season 50 to be like the people who sucked up to CBS the best. Like that's boring. Like I don't want the people who are playing like teacher's pet. Like it has to be the people who make the best television. Sometimes that's gonna be people who break the NDAs. Like that's just the way it is.
Like, usually it is. I feel like those are the people who are most fun.
Yes. Like that's just the way it is. I'm sorry. So yeah, I agree. I hope, because it's like Survivor is kind of just like wrestling, and like wrestlers are always on Twitter like, I'm gonna, like, next match I'm taking out whoever. Like that's just like the fun of it. And it's like we said, most, like I feel like most people who watch Survivor honestly aren't on Twitter. They're probably on Facebook or don't have social media. Like so it doesn't really in the grand scheme of things matter that much. So
I would say that that's true. I used to consider myself like a big super fan, and I only say used to because I've since have met real super fans, and I just do not carry a candle. And even then I'm like, oh, I'm a huge super fan. I like never like followed any of the like Survivor like blogs or Reddit posts and stuff, or like even like the players themselves. Like that is a very recent phenomenon post COVID, where like the show has just gotten like a surge in younger viewers as a result, which is cool to see, like people leave the show with like followings and stuff, but like that was not a consideration before, right? So it's interesting to see players leave now and kind of almost like build brands for themselves based on whatever they think producers want or what their fans want. And it's like, baby, just be yourself. And that's why I love this cast, is like they're just like, fuck you.
And it's just so great. Keep it coming. Like you said, I do also like that we just like don't know. Like I'm like, Q and Venus hating each other does not tell me anything about like who's gonna win this game. Like it just like doesn't have any bearing other than makes me laugh every
day. So Q and Venus both making cameos before the season ends. Like we're not it's gonna be really funny if Q gets invited back, because it's like, okay, he broke the rule. Like, you know, it's funny because Q doing that, he showed, he's like, I can do this and still get a call back. Like he saw the way he was being edited and how much the production loved him.
Yeah.
Like it's gonna be really funny when he inevitably is on season 50. And you know the precedent that sets because
the show is so camp. This cast is so fun and silly. I love it.
Speaking of season 50 high, I'm sure you knew it was coming and you've got your answer ready to go, but we got a question from at Trinta Burner asking if you would play again. What do you say?
I would say yes if the stars aligned and like everything in my personal life allowed me to, including my partner. There's a lot that goes into leaving your life behind for 2 months and then the subsequent year to year and a half afterwards of dealing with weird mental and emotional distress. So at this point, I would be honest and say that I would consider it. Yes.
Period. We had some.
Oh, sorry. Well, the second part of the question is like, do you have a short list of like older contestants you would like love to see on a fraternity season?
Yeah, I'll give you three.
That's what they wanted. Perfect.
Yeah. Wait, let me think of the three. I have two of them, and I don't want to gloss over anyone that I think deserves it. I'll just give you my two that I have. Okay. At number two is Angelina, who like is just an icon. Like, talk about someone who just like was herself. And I also have to explain, like, the people that I stan on Twitter, it's like almost like never the most strategic player, because boring, like, okay, you played a good game, like, congratulations, you probably deserved it. But like, I like people who are like silly. I like people who make decisions that confuse me. I like people who are a little emotional. I like people who are vulnerable, and those are usually not the best players. So so I would love to see Angelina. And then my number one is Sydney from Ko Rong.
Hell yeah.
Yes.
Oh, she just played a killer game. I thought she was so good. And I was like really sad when she like got out at Fire, but I would love to see her play again. I think she's one of those players though that just wouldn't come back because of her career as a bodybuilder, but she's my number one choice.
Excellent pick. Shall we, there's another, I guess, similar sort of question, or well, we got multiple people asking this question. We had Alex as a writer and Enigma1K both asked a similar question, which is, you know, since it's Mother's Day, can you give us, we'll say, a top three mothers of the new era?
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh. We know one of them.
That's so hard for me. Top three mothers. I have two, like, instantaneously.
Okay.
There's so many great choices for three. So, and people definitely will be upset if I don't. Okay. Top three mothers. Number one is obviously the mother of the new era. Is Miss Justine Brennan.
Seriously. Yeah, that was like a free space.
I just have to like take time to explain the Justine phenomenon, which is, don't ask too many questions. Mm-hmm. It's just, if you don't understand, it's not for you to understand. Justine Brennan is just one of the funniest people that I know. And I think the edit, she lasted two episodes. She should have won, if we're being honest.
Oh, we are on the same page.
That's the thing that like makes me really sad. Just knowing Justine is like, yo, this woman is so funny. She's so kind. She is just such an interesting person for me to like have gotten to know over the last like 2 years. And so I think she's such a fun part of this community because there's so much lore around her now, and I love it. Number two, who I would love to see given another chance, is Maddie from 44. Who is also just like another exemplary person in this community that adds so much levity into every situation and is just so kind and fun. And also like the time on the show that we saw of her, like she was really astute and strategic. And I think like the circumstances of her boot were kind of unfortunate and out of her hands. I would love to see her given another opportunity. And number three is, and this person holds like such a special place in my heart because of our experience together. And I'll be vulnerable for a minute and say like, we're not as close as I would like for us to be. And that's okay. Like everyone's on their own journey, is Lydia. I think Lydia is such a special person. I have so much love for her, and I like really cherish all of the time that we had on the island, and I would love to see her be given another opportunity to play a game, honestly, independent of me, and like have her kind of redo on the island. I think that would be fabulous.
Those are amazing choices, I gotta say. I mean, if
free jury goddesses. Yeah.
I mean, if Richard Hatch is going to be on House of Villains, we got to have his number one rival, Lydia Meredith, on Survivor.
I love Twitter. Like, why did that interaction happen?
He was so mad, too. It's like, girl, like,
we all know you did it.
You did it. And, like, yes. This has been decades since you did it. Like, surely you can take a joke.
Laugh queen. Like,
what a moronic comment.
But also fat.
He thought he gagged her, but
he meant to type iconic. He misread. Yeah.
There's like so many great Twitter beefs in the new era.
It's kind of, we should, that might need to be like a bonus episode where we just threw all the Twitter beefs that have arisen and fallen and risen again on Twitter.
I'll send you my list. I was gonna start a thread and then I got way too tired.
Okay.
After, like, two entries, I was like trying to like find screenshots. I was like, I'm not doing all this.
I really love the sound of that. Yes, we'll have a spreadsheet ready to go. And we ever since the that person who would do the like political people's like political leaning spreadsheet, mm-hmm. we gotta fill this out that space.
Really?
Do you remember that?
Yeah,
it was someone.
Who was it? What was her name?
I forget. She's like still. I think she's still
Martha.
Like
it's isn't it Real World Martha?
It's Martha. Yeah, it's Real World Martha. She used to make a spreadsheet every season, and it would be like everyone's names, and then like likely more blue it was, the more left it was, and the more red it was, the more red it was, and there was explanations. And the last one she did was Winners at War, and I remember a lot of people getting really up in arms about that. And I think that's when she decided to stop.
It would look a little crazy right now, I'm sure.
Yeah. You would need a separate column for a certain issue get into it.
Lordy, lordy. Yeah, that's...
Which is, I also wanted to take this time to say, like, I'm so appreciative and proud of specifically the Survivor alumni who have been open and supportive over Palestinian lives. And mm-hmm. calling for a stop to the genocide and calling for a ceasefire and actually using your platform to say shit that matters, to mm-hmm. say shit that matters, to have like, to like plead for people's lives. Like that's the shit that matters. So thank mm-hmm. you to the community members that have done that. I see you and I appreciate you and free Palestine.
Period.
Like it's just, you were one of the new era. We is so vocal on this, and this is something I think a lot in previous eras of the show people would have been afraid to speak on because they don't want it to hurt their image, they don't want to hurt their chances getting on the show again. And some things matter more than what people think of.
We have to normalize. We have to normalize being vocal about causes that we believe in and creating space to affirm each other. I think that is like the most important thing. And fortunately for me, I live in New Orleans, which is a city that is very progressive. And there is so much incredible activism here and community organizers that have made me feel safe for like my beliefs and expressing myself. And I wanted to just like affirm every person in the Survivor community that has been vocal and supportive.
Love it so much. And it's like it should not be a controversial thing to like say not be committing genocide, but like that should not be controversial, and it should not come with claims of like or devaluing in like an actual problem, which is anti-Semitism, that is like a real issue, and like you're devaluing it by connecting the two. And it's like it's really frustrating. Just, and like, I'm speaking even as like, not even a player on the show. This is like people who like have a Twitter account who's like we interact with a lot of Survivor fans on a daily basis. And it's like, you do get blowback every time. Like, I feel like every time you say something about it, you do get those comments that are like really ignorant and like oppositional to it. And it's like, it can be frustrating. And it's like, I really commit, like you said, I commend everyone, like all the Survivor players who do like, say things knowing they will get those comments because it's the right thing to do. Like that's awesome. I love that.
I completely agree with everything that's been said. I think more people should be speaking up about it, and I love the people who do.
Yes, that's amazing. And I think that's, you know, the what like the whole like Survivor Diversity campaign like has like given us is like more people who like are willing to like speak on these instead of just like people like weird meatheads they picked up out of like an LA gym who like don't give a fuck about those things or actively like support like awful policies.
Thank God for the diversity initiative. It is truly the most stunning thing that CBS has like given the Survivor community is just this really interesting like new group of people who share such different ideas and values. And it's made the show such like, it's made the community, in my opinion, such like a more welcoming, inclusive, warm space.
Yes. It just feels, I don't know. It feels better to be a Survivor fan now, in my opinion. Like, there's just, like, more community, and there's more, I don't know, there's, like, I don't know, when Sam and I first started, I feel like, I don't, not to speak for Sam, but I was just, like, I don't know if people, like, really care, like, that, like, beyond just, like, gay people will listen to us was kind of my thing, is, like, I feel like we're going to be saying things that, like, most, like, straight Survivor fans, like, don't agree with or don't care about, or, like, we can queen out over Justin Brennan. it speaks to a larger audience than what I expected.
I'm just surprised. I've just always thought back on when we started the podcast, I'm just like, I feel like we were watching so many bad seasons and suddenly we were like, let's start podcasting about
let's talk about this shitty show.
It's so much more fun to be like, I feel like Survivor's gotten so much better over the last like 4 years. So that's thrilling.
Yes.
Yeah, it's really funny you guys started this after Island of the Idols.
You're like,
maybe this next one will be better. And it was,
Only marginally. And well, I mean, after the only season I've ever I stopped watching after Kelly was voted out of Island of the Idols. Like that's, and for some reason I was like, I want to keep talking about this show that I officially was so angry and upset with that I stopped watching it halfway through a season for the first time.
That was a dark night. I remember where I was that night too. That was a dark night for the fandom.
It was rotted, and I hope Survivor has learned their lesson on that and is doing better. I don't know.
PTSD around that season, because I'm like, I kind of want to rewatch it because I remember pre-merge was so fun. And then I think about that episode, I'm like, oh, I can't do it. I can't do it.
It's the only time I felt physically ill watching this show, and I can't go back there.
It's just like that. And there's just like, I hate, like, those are seasons where, like, I recently recommended, like, seasons to a watch order to a friend. And I just, like, put, like, certain seasons down, like, you don't have to watch these. Like, there's just moments in them that make me really upset. And then he somehow ended up watching season 30 on accident. I was like, why did I even make this list? If you're just going to accidentally watch one of the most, like, uncomfortable seasons ever made.
Yeah, that's a good word to describe it.
Any other thoughts on this episode?
We have another Twitter question I'd like to talk about, because there's been like, I definitely saw some people talking about this, and this is from Aiden Julian at Bay Dange. Baden J. Oh, like Baden. Okay. What do you think of Kenzie's choice to vote Venus? Is she positioned to be the swing vote in the Maria versus Charlie clash? Could that help her secure a win? Voting Venus gives up some power, but also makes her free agent. I mean, it didn't make a difference if she voted Venus or not here. So kind of like, I feel like if you have the wherewithal to know, like, you don't have the power in the vote, that's fine. Like she just became allies with Venus like that day. Yeah. And like, you know, there's times when it makes sense to like throw your weight around. But I think someone like Kenzie who's in this position, her best bet is to just, all right, go with the majority and try to be in that position to where when these people want to take each other out in the next vote or two, be there. But there's like, I don't like how would it have helped her to force people, try to force Charlie to vote Venus? Because Charlie had the power. At a certain point, you need to be like, it's what is worth it and what's not. And I don't think that would have been worth it for her.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like this was kind of her only move here, given all of the circumstances that played out that day. But I think what's way worse, like the lead into this episode is like, this is the first time Kenzie's ever been left out of the vote. Like, Tiff went home. She feels bad about it for two reasons. Like, it first, like, it was her plan. Like, she wanted to do it anyway. Like, she was ready to, but they just left her out, and she was left out. And so her old number one is gone. And now in this episode is ending, and she is on the right side of the vote again. But the majority, the larger majority has decided that, like, they're totally fine, like, casting a vote on her to split in case Venus played an idol. And so, like, that's not going to feel good either. Like, she
mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's still clearly not, like, on the inside. And so, like, this was, like, the right move for now, because it's like she's at least showing the rest of the people that she's gonna do what she says she's gonna do or whatever. But, like, it's still clearly, like, written down on paper that she's not in the in crowd.
Yeah, I think both of those analyses were correct. I think, like, if you don't really have agency to change the vote, why would you try for someone that you've been close to for 24 hours? Like, I'm not gonna risk my day mm-hmm. for you. But also, now that I'm talking about Kenzie out loud, I'm
just always talking about her internally. Yeah.
I think her edit is so interesting because she is shown, like, I'm rooting for her to win now. I think she's, like, person I'm rooting most to win. But I'm failing mm-hmm. to see how she explains her game at the end, because the edit is consistently showing she wants to make a move, but she's incapable of necessarily getting the numbers to pull it off. But it's always explaining her thought process, which is interesting, because I feel like we usually don't hear from people who fail to make a move happen. So I wonder if that's part of, like, if she gets to the end, like, her crafting a narrative based on social gameplay, because even though she's incapable of controlling the vote, she's always part of the vote. So she's always in on the numbers. She understands what's going on. She just doesn't have the agency to create her own moves, which sometimes mm-hmm. is all you need, is to get to the end and be the most likable. You don't necessarily have to have mm-hmm. big moves on your resume.
Yeah.
I agree with that specific point, but it does seem like these people in this cast is so focused on credit and, like, who is getting the credit for each individual move. And so I do wonder if that, like, hopefully she can, like, would be able to get over that hurdle, but it does seem like something yeah. where it's like, what would she say if someone's like, right. well, what did you do? Like, what was your move? Like, what should we give you credit for? Like, the show yeah. is telling us so far, like, she doesn't have something yet.
Yeah, which I think is, like, either this vote or maybe even in the finale, there will be something that I feel like it could go two directions. Maybe she is our first, like, woman Charlie Brown character who, like, does keep trying to make things happen. It just never happens, which would be so devastating.
Mm-hmm.
Or she does, like, maybe pull off like a Marianne style, like, snipes someone. Like,
I was gonna say, final six has final six yeah. has historically been, like, one of the most important votes, like, even in the new era that's yeah. continued. So, like, I think it is, like, this is clearly the turning going to be a turning Mackenzie's narrative of, like, well, can she get this thing? And, you know, there's still, like, finally we have less game left to play than we used to, because we don't vote at four anymore, but there's still a lot of game left in the sense that finals five and final six are really crucial votes, and, like, having something right before the end, you know, like, could be the thing. But I also think, I mean, we're getting into edit talks, I think Kenzie's story, if she is a winner, it is more about being likable and being, like, because there's been a lot of content about, you know, her relationships, and, like, she's just been portrayed even, like, fairly positively. And I think that could be the story. Like, I don't think it necessarily rules her out, but I do think, again, Sam, logically with this jury, it seems like you would need something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's hard. It's like you said, Ty, it's hard to know, like, because maybe it does, neither of those things happen. Maybe she never gets credit for anything. And, yeah. and but she's still
maybe winning. She gets voted, like, out next week. Or like, maybe, yeah, she's voted out next week. Yeah.
It's just, like, no way of knowing. But it, like Sam was saying, that's kind of the narrative that they're not showing that for no reason. Like, that's, like, mm-hmm. the story that they are telling us. So it's going to come back, and it's like, maybe she could still try to claim the Tiffany move as her own, because she did want it to happen. It just happened, like, a week later, and, like, she wasn't part of it.
I think that would be a bad thing for her to try to tell.
Right? I think she's not going to try that, because, like, I hope that not. Also, if it's about telling a story, it's not the like, underdog story is a really compelling story. If that's all you have to tell, you need to tell it well. And like, if that's how, what she gets to the end with,
yeah,
that she started off on the disaster drive and she came again, like, you can't, like, this has not come up again, thinking more about narrative and stuff, about like Abano blowing up her spot on the journey, talking about how she's the social goddess running the tribe, mermaid dragon or whatever. She has that in her pocket to be like, I had perception in the merge and it never hurt me. Like, losing her biggest ally and then being on the bottom. Like, that is a story. And like, so if you're someone like Kenzie, where things aren't going your way, you just need to be aware of like, what kind of story can I afford to tell? And then tell that story like hell, like, and hope that differentiates from, if you're next, sitting next to someone like Maria and Charlie, like both of them, what differentiates you from them? You have a really compelling underdog story, whereas they were in power kind of the whole time. And again, it depends on the jury. I think the jury would still like really like to see moves, but if they're really pissed at Charlie Maria, that story might be enough.
Yeah.
It's really pretty in my alley. Sorry.
It's like, so, it's, I know, in my alley.
I'm straight, but that's beautiful.
Did you see the Aurora Borealis?
Yeah. I went outside. I was like a little high and like went out in my, just changed out of my pajamas and walked around. One of my favorite cats, she walked with me for a while. We looked up at the sky. The cat didn't look up, but I could see it a bit.
That's so cute.
She didn't know what was going on.
How dare you? Yeah, it was like fully like storming here in Chicago when it was happening. Like, there was no way for us to see it.
Also, why don't we get like an Amber Alert about this? Like, how come I found out after the fact on Twitter that it was happening?
Yeah, we needed Joe Biden. Why didn't you text us all and tell us, like, what's that presidential alert for, if not to tell us?
Right. This is a national emergency. Please, I need to go outside.
Like, has there ever been, I don't remember, have we gotten one since that guy sent one out?
I didn't realize they were like visible not from the Arctic Circle.
Oh, yeah. Aurora wasn't? Huh. That's so
they're
weird.
Like, yeah, like in, you can see them in like parts of Canada that are in the Arctic Circle, like not all the time. And then I think it was just like such a massive solar storm, it was visible elsewhere. I don't know enough about it, but like I know the initial map because I saw like the announcement about it like that day, and I looked at the map and it showed like we were in like kind of a zone that wasn't supposed to get a ton of it, so I wasn't even going to go outside. And then I saw there's an account in Montreal called Fuck No Montreal, which is kind of like the shit posting account where you can submit stuff, and people were posting their pictures. I was like, okay. And then I saw like people like were seeing as far south as like Georgia. So I think it ended up just being I think it just ended up being way bigger than they thought.
Too much light pollution near me. Didn't see a damn flicker.
Yeah, that's sad. Oh, so many sky things happening lately.
Aliens next.
Ferrera album. Girl.
Next. Sky Ferrera album. Oh my god. Good luck with that one.
Do we have anything else before we one of our other questions, it wasn't a question, but it's from Blazing Cash One. Tell Justine to pick her phone up, arrow up emoji for Survivor 50. So just want to make sure.
Absolutely.
I thought I read that as Janine because they have a Janine profile picture.
We would also love
Janine on great
50. Justine, winner of season 50, 100%. She needs to get the Wentworth call. I'm sorry. Like, Justine needs another shot. I don't know
if
she wants one.
Let's start the campaign now.
Because that's my fear with, like, we're, like, shoving all the, like, pre-40 people and the 40 people into one season. It's like, we are going to lose the pre-merge goddess, like, slot. Like, that's, like, not even going to be a priority, I feel like, for people, you know?
Yeah.
And she did say do you remember the two people Justine said you would play the most like? Dellie Wentworth is one of them.
And Joe Anglim.
Yep.
Was that it? Oh, Lord. Queen.
I love her. I won't give up her tea like that. You guys have to have her on an episode.
Tell her to pick up phone and respond to our DMs.
I did. I told her. I was like, Justine, you have to do the podcast with the Bitter Jurors, and she goes, oh my god, that funny Twitter gaze, and I was like, yes, You have to get her to tell her casting story. I think it is so fucking funny, but yeah.
We would die.
Literally, it would be very important.
We'll follow up. With the release of this, we'll follow up.
Yeah.
We'll tag her, be like, reply to our DM. No, I don't think I have anything more to say about this episode, except like until we talk about Edric more specifically. I thought that this was a fun episode. You know, less fun than like the high highs of the like most recent like 4 or 5, but still good.
Yeah, that's fair. I was very I didn't even like really talk about the like watching it at RTP live.
Oh yeah, we talked about that.
Which was really, really fun, which they had never done it here, and I've never been to one either. I know they did like a rap con once for like years and years ago, which Brandon Donlan was at, apparently.
He was at everything. He's met every survivor.
He's been that girl. So it was really fun. Obviously, the big moment was Venus finding the idol is a huge explosion, which I will say was, I filmed that on my phone. And before we started the episode, Rob was like, take your phones out, record stuff, like take pictures. I record that scene and I'm instantly being like accosted by like an attendee, like, excuse, you have 2 more strikes, something like that. I was like, what? Bro, what? It was so bizarre.
For filming a TV show that's on?
That's currently airing, like, ookie. It was weird.
But just you specifically in an auditorium full of people.
It was very strange. But anyway, regardless of that moment.
You got 2 strikes.
Yeah, I was like, okay, fine. Which really, like, obviously I'm, like, supposed to be tweeting right now. That's, like, my whole thing I'm supposed to be doing. So that was tough. But no, it was a really fun experience. And then obviously everyone was so devastated when our diva left. The guy next to me who I was talking to was like very nice. We the whole time he's like, there's no way Venus is going. I was like, I just had that horrible pit in my stomach ever since, like I said this before to Sam and Christine off pod, but like ever since like the previously on with Tiffany, like saying, man, I should have played my idol, which was like exactly what Hunter said the episode where she went home. I was like, something shady is about to go down again. And then as soon as Kinsey and Venus are like, man, Tiffany's gonna really regret going home with an idol in her pocket, huh? I'm like, God damn it.
They subtitled Venus saying it would be horrible if I went home with an idol in my pocket or something like that.
I'm like, yeah, it would be horrible. Please don't let that happen. But as we realize, thanks to Ben, it's like, maybe it's good because we would have lost Kinsey here if she had played her idol, right? Which is unacceptable to me.
Yeah, we needed her to go so she can come back for season 50 and joint slay with Justine Brennan.
Of course. It would be over.
They would get the girls talking.
The spiders would be looking at them from every direction. And
I just need them to pair up and go antagonize every person on the island together.
I would love that. I mean, dare I say, should season 50 be our first all-women cast? I say yes.
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 That's what we say every season.
That's real inclusion is when you get rid of all the men.
That's what I'm saying, honestly. Like, you know, if I'm like a return, like if I'm a survivor player and I get the call for season 50, I'm like, oh, please give it to Justine Brennan instead. I'm begging you.
Exactly.
That's how you show real allyship. So yes. What were you talking about? We're wrapping up the episode.
We were trying to wrap up, yeah.
But we still have to do Edric.
Yes. Yeah. Hi, what are your social medias? Are you plugging anything before we talk Edric?
Yeah. If you want to follow me on Twitter, it's at Zhangy Hi. If you want to follow me on Instagram, it's at RUHi. And then as always, Stan Justine Brennan.
Beautiful.
That's the call to action every time. Yeah. Reindeerix on Twitter. Follow us, Bitter Jurors Pod, Twitter, Instagram, all that good stuff.
So true. Me, at Sam Stanish. Support us on Patreon. $5 a month gets you 2 extra episodes a month. We just recorded an episode talking about challengers. And we're getting ready for more Buffy boyfriends. So look out for that.
And you can follow me at the Ixtine Files on both Twitter and Instagram. You can read my writing on Inside Survivor, where every week I write an article with Gia Worthy. And yeah, that's it.
Okay. Beautiful. Magic time.
Absolutely.
I feel well. Hi. Who's your like winner edit? Like it's happening. Who's giving you the vibes?
I think Charlie's getting the winner's edit if he makes it to the end. But if he doesn't make it to the end, then I think this person wins no matter what. If they get to the end, is Kenzie.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's the feeling. And like, that's my fear of like, is she going to be able to make it there? Because it's like, she has, like we said, she doesn't have any agency. And it's like, Liz made very explicitly clear in this episode, she is like who the like majority wants out next, like in the order of elimination, which maybe that could be a good thing for her. Maybe that'll be like what she needs to like really, okay, well, I really have nothing to lose here. So I might as well just like go ham and like try to make something happen. But yes, I feel amazing about Kenzie. It just is a struggle because it's like how do you edit her as a winner if she is having these like multiple weeks in a row of like having zero agency in the game? I feel like this is as good as it could get for her. Because we still hear her, all her reasoning, we still see her bonding with people who go on the jury, like great stuff in that regard, but it is hard. I feel like with Charlie, it's like, I don't know if this is supposed to be like winner doubt here, where it's like he is aware, like scared of like the jury's reaction to his moves. But I still think he and Kenzie to me are like very clearly my top twos.
Mm-hmm. I feel like this was not a bad thing for Charlie and his story, given this, like, I feel like he was very justified in like going away after the Venus thing. I feel like this episode was much worse for Kenzie, even like, I feel like I, you know, as I've discussed along the way, I had high hopes for Ben. I do feel like I'm ready to, you know, shut the store, close up shop, whatever. But like, I mean, he did get a confessional explaining that he wanted Venus to go home. So it's kind
his
of
only
like,
one.
You know, yeah, but King. They showed us his mindset.
It was a good one. It was a good one.
I do feel like Kenzie was not amazing in this episode. Like, why would they randomly be like, giving Kenzie this confessional where she's like completely misreading Venus? If she's like she definitely doesn't have an idol, she's like, maybe she does and she's fooling all of us, but I doubt it, or like whatever. Like it's so unnecessary, it feels like.
But why did they show D so wrongly thinking that Sifu had an advantage when he didn't?
You know, I don't even remember that.
It's funny like did sure. Like I think my read on that, and I think is I agree. Like rewatching the episode, I was like, okay, totally. This is like kind of a weird scene for Kenzie. She is the winner because it was like, so they've got the silly music and everything. And she was wrong. But to me, looking at like what happened in this episode, all of this was like leading up to Venus not playing it and going out with the idol in her pocket. And like, it seems like the joke is on Venus, like, and that like all of this, like, conversation about whether or not Venus is the other or not. I think it would have been worse if Venus had played it and that had been kept in, when if Venus had kept it and it not gone and it gets played, it could get played. I think that would have been like absolutely a lot worse. But I'd forgotten the D thing, and then I like saw someone mention that and I was like, oh yeah, like there's so much like time spent in the with the Sifu of it all, and she wasn't the only one. Because we were like, why does everyone think Sifu has an idol? And Dee was one of those people. They could have easily had Dee not be one of those, show one of those confessionals. But you know, people, they edit now. Like I think they're more. We talked about this Omer last week. They're more comfortable like showing people be wrong, be shown as annoying. And so that's my takeaway from it. I agree. This was like not the best episode for Kenzie, but it was like I'm still leaning more on the, how would you show this? And I think she was shown as sympathetic at the start of the episode. She was shown, she really got to explain herself. She really got to explain herself leading up to this vote about like, okay, I don't really like think this is the best idea for me, but like I can also lose Venus here. This kind of threat of Venus not being in the best position, but like we're getting to hear from like her, like why Akenti of like why this certain thing would make sense for her and why something wouldn't. And then just this season-long narrative, like Kenzie has one. And this still this unresolved threat of her being framed as this huge threat and this hasn't come back. And I still think that's something interesting to keep track of, because that was, again, you could just say we saw it just because Manu's Manu, and of course they were going to show that. You know, I don't think its inclusion itself points to Kenzie winning necessarily, but it's just an interesting thing to remember.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what I like, she also had like a line about like the million. She like name checked the like $1 million in this episode at one point, I think. Which is always very important. I feel like Charlie, it's like...
there's... Where did Charlie?
Did he?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was like, this could be a move where I'm giving $1 million to Maria or something like that.
Oh, well, that's horrible. Well,
yeah. But like, to go along with that, I actually felt like this episode was amazing for Maria. Or like, it's obviously like, there's like shadow, obviously, and cloudiness because of like the reward thing and everybody being like, this person is like the big target now. But like all season long, everybody's been like, I need credit, I need credit, I need credit. And no one is getting it except like Venus claiming her own mistaken credit. And then like Maria has this gigantic episode where every single person is like, that's Maria's move. Like she gets the credit for this. Like that's her. And like the only thing like cutting that down was Venus being like, let Maria think she gets the credit for this move, which is like, she is. And so I do feel like the theme of the season being credit and Maria being the like the first person to receive full credit for something could be like good for like her winner story, even though it looks so like bad otherwise.
Yeah.
I have a thought, like looking at the season like long storyline and narrative, because like obviously thus far it has been the credit thing, but thinking back to that weird Jeff thing at the beginning about personalities and like likableness, basically, like if we were looking at the potential of it getting like a social win, what if this is all setting up for it to just be like, you can get to the end with the credit, but if people don't like you, like, yeah. That's like, I'm not predicting that. I'm just saying that's mm-hmm. could be an interesting, that would be a very funny, I would really like if Survivor editors did that. I think that would, like, because I miss when Survivor seasons used to have, like, stronger overarching, like, storylines and narratives. And if it all comes back to that first point of, like, what if the credit doesn't matter as much? Again, I'm not willing to make that prediction, like put money on it because of the way this jury is. But that could be what happens. And that would explain a lot of what we're seeing across the season.
Plus, like, receiving so much credit so early is putting her in the, like, whatever the crosshairs of like everybody else. So it's like you need credit at the right time, or like you need to be able to claim credit at the right time. But like the monologue of Jeff at the beginning with like who likes who, blah blah blah, it's like is it that like you can be so well liked and like get to the end, but for whatever reason the people will not vote for you even though you are this like social butterfly. Like I don't know what the
that happened with Carolyn.
Yeah. Or is it, yeah, is it that? Or is it the you can make all the right moves, but if people don't like you,
yeah,
it doesn't matter. Yeah, that's totally right. You could read that different ways.
And this is also, and this is like a wholly different section. And I don't think that Charlie's winning already, like despite this. But in this episode, like all season long, we've been talking about how Jeff Probst is God in this universe. Like Jeff Probst is like all the signs and like everything about season 46 is like one of the themes is Jeff Probst is God. In this episode, Charlie uses here's the Taylor Swift's honest truth, and I'm like, okay, so not Jeff Probst, you are worshiping a false idol.
So he's over, he can't win.
I do think that, I mean, I already didn't think he was going to, but I felt like that was like a fun thematic thing.
That was insane. Well, I think
that tracks with everything I've been saying. That's not insane.
What? No, I'm saying why he... I'm saying him saying...
Okay, Taylor I thought you were like, my truth. Read was insane.
No,
I was like, what do you mean?
I meant him saying Taylor Swift's honest truth is the most insane thing I've ever heard anyone say in my life.
Is this like the gay view of Survivor pods? Do you guys generally agree or disagree?
Would I think usually... when it comes to Etchik, we disagree, right?
I think so.
For the most part.
Sam and I tend to disagree.
Yeah, I just agree with whoever I think I decide to agree with on that week, you know. I like to play both sides in that way.
Social god.
Yes. No, I think, I don't know, we just all have, I guess, like, different ways of thinking. I don't know.
I feel like with 45, yeah, 45, we had some early on some different views, but we fell in line pretty quickly behind D.
Yeah. See, we can't even agree on this.
No, but like certainly previous seasons.
44, I feel like Derek and I were both Jam Jam and Christine was arguing for Carolyn. And then
I think by final seven or like by the last few couple episodes, I switched to Jam Jam, but I was definitely writing for Carolyn early on.
So, but I do feel like this is maybe the latest in the season we've all been so like disparate, and like I feel like I'm even sort of like, or you like, I feel like we're all not even like fully committed to like a person, where I feel like usually we are, but like, and I guess the closest thing we have is like Kenzie, but again, if these people are listening, like my opinions on this does not reflect like how excited I would be for these people to win. Like,
oh my God,
I think that everybody left, like, in so like even several eliminations back, like I would have loved no matter who won. It's just like it's so interesting to try to like analyze and figure out like these flaws or like the things we're not seeing and what the themes are. It's like I still don't think it's Kenzie, even though I don't know who it is.
Oh, who it Liz? Because it's Liz.
It's not Liz.
No,
unfortunately, it's not.
Lesbians, let's ride.
I would love a unexpected Liz win, but she's not winning, unfortunately.
You never know.
She's an icon, though, and I think she should get all the love from the fans for making it such an entertaining season. But mama, she's not
winning. You're not feeling the fantasy. That's okay. Yeah, I think if I had to bet money on it, I would probably bet money on Kenzie, honestly. Same. But it's like, again, it's like, I don't know. It's just like, I think that's part of the, like, how fun this, like, post-merch has been, is because it's just like, I don't really know, honestly. And I feel like we've honed in, like, pretty well in the past. Like, I feel like Marianne, we were like, okay. Like, I feel it's her, like, maybe at this point in the season already. For 42, I don't really remember. Like, definitely going into the finale, I was like, okay, it's definitely Marianne.
After final six, I mean, I wasn't a regular host on that. I feel like a lot of people, like, after final six, were like, okay.
That happens when you're on the island, too.
Yeah.
Like, there are moments, because you only know as much as, like, the next person who comes tells you. But there's a moment when you see, like, wow, this is, like, such a interesting click in my brain. The reason why like big moves and like big resume makers are so important, especially at Tribal, is that that's really the only way that you can publicly take credit for a move without argument. And so like for me to see Marianne's move at Final Six to take out Omer, it was just like so stunning that it made it a lot easier for me to envision her winning. So really at that point, in my head, it was hers to lose. And when she got to Final Tribal and explained her game so eloquently with that move as sort of like the big shiny object, like it made it so easy to justify. So that's a reason why people want credit so much. But, you know, that's it. That's my thought.
No, that makes sense to me. It's like you're feeling, it's like I'm sure you have people you're rooting for on the jury bench, and it's like, maybe you did, maybe there was, I don't know, like maybe you can speak more to that. Like maybe you did want to vote for Marianne before that just because you liked her as a person, but you were like, I don't know if other people will be on board or if it's like, even if I would want to vote for her at the end, but then it's like you have a moment where you're like, oh, okay, I do want to, I could see it for you. So that's
the really cool. The tea is the jury is your most like invaluable sort of like arsenal to kind of manage, because we spend so much time together at Ponderosa where we are talking about the game and we're dissecting the game. And if you have someone that is an advocate for you, that is like, which me, Chanel, and Tori were very much advocates for Marianne, especially after the Omer move, where it was so easy to say, listen, you're not really considering her because I don't know why, but like these are like the objective moves that she made. Like, you should really give her a chance to explain herself. Like, when you make big moves like that on the jury, for the jury to see, like, the jury has a much easier time helping you kind of get your win.
Mm-hmm. Which, yeah, that's the fun thing about Survivor, is just like that sort of push and pull. It's like the jury still has so much control, and it's on good players like to take advantage of that, like, instead of resting. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like that was maybe Cassidy's big downfall, at least according to the edit, was like maybe she was a little too, like, she overestimated her, like, her friends on the jury, or like thought maybe the jury would be a little more willing to listen to her than they ended up being. Which, like, it's hard to control. Like, that's like,
yeah,
you got so many things you're trying to control. You're just trying to get to the end, and you also have to think about that too. It's just like a lot. So, as always, props to anyone who, like, does well in Survivor or even plays Survivor, because that's hard as hell.
Props to anyone who wins Survivor.
Congratulations to everybody who's ever read a book. Hi, talking as a juror, like, when you're at Ponderosa and you're like trying to push for your person, is it a thing where you have to be like, but you don't want to push too hard because then you're annoying them and then they'll never vote for that person?
Absolutely. Yeah, there were moments where I knew it was going to be an uphill battle to convince people to consider, like, Marianne as the winner, which is why, like, headed into Tribal Council was, like, so nervous as, like, a Marianne supporter, because I had no idea where the votes were falling. It was, like, our Ponderosa experience was, like, really kind of weird, especially when talking about, like, picking a winner. Like, it was so split. People were really underestimating Marianne's game, even, like, leading up to the boat ride to get to Final Tribal. And I felt like her supporters, myself, Chanel, and Tori, were, like, so vocal about, like, you're not giving her credit because she's, like, a younger woman. She's, like, a little bit annoying. Like, you guys have to look past that to, like, look at her, like, the moves that she made and how much she was able to pull off, considering she had no seat at the table, right? But I didn't want to go too hard because I knew that there were people that were voting for Mike. And, like, due to the complexity of, like, the relationships that you have with your castmates, especially at Ponderosa, like, these, you're trying to convince people who you either just voted off or just voted you off to agree with you on giving someone $1 million. That there's still a lot of politicking involved. So if you push too hard on someone that you don't have the best relationship with, that could go sideways for you. So it's such a delicate line to kind of maneuver at Ponderosa, which is why, like, when I see comments online of, like, oh, this person, like, poisoned the jury and blah, blah, blah. Sure, like, that's a possibility, but you're also giving a lot of credit to a singular person for influencing the outcome of, like, an 8-person jury. Like, that's probably not the case.
Yeah, and I feel like it's just, like, I feel like that would be really hard to, like, fully poison a jury against a person. Like, you're always going to have people who they disagree with you, and maybe they won't even say anything in the moment, but it's like, I just think it's like, I just don't think that's really possible. I think you can maybe sway people a little more.
Yeah,
I just don't think it's possible to fully poison a jury. At least I hope not. That would be kind of sad if people were just, like, willing to listen to one person about, like, well, I hate this person, so I'm gonna make everyone else hate them. I just don't think that's how people work.
It does happen, though, and that's the tea. Like, those moments do happen. But you are correct, Derek, in the sense of, like, people are able to perceive that. Like, we all just got out of this very strategic game, like, with social manipulation. Like, I'm going to be able to tell if you're trying to convince me of something that I don't actually believe in. So, like, save your breath. It's very hard to poison a jury with people who have their own thoughts.
Yes. Oh, man. So this will be, I feel like this will be a really fun Final Tribal for that reason.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm excited.
Would it be laughable to bring up Q? Like, do we think that there's any possible way Q wins?
I don't know.
Just from a logic perspective, I don't think like, there's enough people in the jury who I think will be done with him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like, I don't think it's laughable because it is, he has a big edit, and I don't think
he's a main character. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think we should discredit that, especially in, like, a post Gabler world, which, like, I think Gabler's edit is better than Q's for a lot of reasons, but I, for argument's sake, let's say it's like, that's not an impossibility. And it's like, Q, like, could have a winning story, but it's like, I don't know, like, this episode, he very hilariously bragged about his 23 like slices of pizza and stuff, which was so good, but it's like you would also want to hear his like a more purposeful sort of like narrative from Q about like, yes, I've received votes at every tribal council for the past like 3 rounds, and here's like how I'm like escaping that target every single time, and we just like don't get that, at least not from his perspective.
Yeah, I'm with you. I feel like we didn't mention him at all, so I wanted to bring it up
for sure because he is like such a big character. And that's, I don't know if he did win, it would be surprising, but I guess I wouldn't be like shocked. I would be hilarious. And I don't know, he just hasn't been quiet. I feel like that's kind of the sin that's like making me not think. I feel like Ben honestly might be even below Q for me in terms of like winner equity for that very reason, because it's just like genuinely have no idea like where his head is at in the game.
We get his perspective in every episode. I'm just gonna say, like, it's not okay. I understand that it's a very muted edit and he doesn't have like a story, quote unquote. Sure. Like we're at least getting
people don't know what he's doing.
Right. But like I think there are things there.
Sure.
Yeah.
There are things there, no, I won't deny.
But yeah. So
well yes.
Fun stuff. Kenzie'd be fun. They'd all be fun.
No, I think we're gonna get a great winner regardless. There's no one like I'd be unhappy with at this point.
So. Oh yeah. Yeah, this has just become a much more fun season. I think it's just very funny to think about this season as like we had like 4 episodes of Banu almost going home, and we've had 4 episodes of like Q almost going home. Like that is like
yeah, that was just the warm up.
Yeah, that's just the story of the season, baby. Which is fun. So exciting stuff. Any other concluding thoughts?
Well, I'll plug, if you're in New Orleans, we're having a finale watch party at the bar in the Bywater. It's free. It's silly. The coolest queer Survivor fans in New Orleans come and hang out with us.
That's so exciting. Love. I love that. Have you done parties there before? Is this going to be like a new thing?
It's not my party. It's this is something that I wanted to talk about, which is like my favorite thing that I'm so grateful for from the Survivor experience is the people that I've met as a result, and not necessarily like other players, just like people from the community. There are some really cool, fascinating, creative, intelligent, silly people that are fans of the show, and I have found those people in New Orleans, and they're like so integral to my life. They're my community, and they are these wonderful artists who host a beautiful finale party in the Bywater every season. So come join us. It is a good time.
Period. I love that. Yeah. Well, thank you, Hi, for joining us. As always, it's so fun. Sam, Christine, any concluding thoughts?
Come to the Fruity Island watch parties. I think we're all sold out for our $3 bill party right now, but maybe there will be a wait list. Follow Welcome to Fruity Island for more information.
I got nothing.
Yeah, I can't watch this episode live this week. I'm DJing with my friend Juliet, so that'll be fun. But then next week for the finale, I will probably be at someone's house drinking, and that'll be fun.
My mom's going to be here, so maybe I'll watch it with her this week, not finale.
That's so cute. First time in Montreal, or has she been up there
before? No, this is her third time. Yeah.
Ooh, a veteran.
But she's staying with me. My parents like never stay with me. My mom's coming and like staying in my apartment, so that'll be interesting. We'll have a sleepover, watch Survivor like we did when I was a kid.
And then go to Applebee's like you did every week.
Yeah, we don't have that in Montreal. They would have to call it like Bon Mabay.
Bon Mabay. That's so cute. I like that more than Applebee's. Well, thank you all so much for listening. Thank you, Hi, again for joining us. Amazing time. We'll see you all next week for the penultimate episode of Survivor 46. Bye.
Bye.